We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, chapter 22, entitled Prithu Maharaj, His Meeting with the Kumaras, text number 18. Sanat Kumaru Vacha Sadhu Pristam Maharaja Sarva Bhuta Hitatmana Bhavata Vidusachapi Sadunam Matiri Drishi Sanat Kumar Uvacha. Sanat Kumar said, Sadhu, saintly, Pristam, question. Maharaja, my dear king, Sarvabhuta, all living entities, Hitatmana, by one who desires good for all, Bhavata, by you, Vidusa, well learned, Cha, in. Api, although, Sadunam, of the saintly persons, Mati, intelligent, Idrisi, like this. Translation. Sanat Kumar said, my dear King Prithu, I am very nicely questioned by you. Such questions are beneficial for all living entities, especially because they are raised by you who are always thinking of the good of others. Although you know everything, you ask such questions because that is the behavior of saintly persons. Such intelligence is befitting your position. Purport. Maharaj Prithu was well conversant in transcendental science, yet he presented himself before the Kumaras as one ignorant of it. The idea is that even if a person is very exalted and knows everything, before his superior, he should present questions. For instance, although Arjuna knew all transcendental science, he questioned Krishna as if he did not know. Similarly, Prithu Maharaj knew everything, but he presented himself before the Kumaras as if he did not know anything. The idea is that questions by exalted persons put before the Supreme Personality of Godhead or his devotees are meant for the benefit of the general people. Therefore, sometimes great personalities put themselves in that position and inquire from a higher authority because they're always thinking of the benefit of others. So Sanat Kumara speaking for Kumaras was pointing out that Maharaj Prithu certainly was fully conversant with transcendental knowledge. But nonetheless, Maharaj Prithu was asking these questions on transcendental subject matter. And it is said this is the way of saintly personalities. And basically, there are two reasons given. One reason is a matter of etiquette, that when a senior person is present, even if one knows, one should still ask questions on the subject matter that one already knows. Right? That is one point. And the other point that was made here, even when a saintly personality may know the answer to questions, still the questions are asked for the benefit of others. A third reason may be there, and that reason is found in the descriptions of the discussions between Sukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Pariksit. And there it is said that, well, Maharaj Pariksit was in the same position. He was also a great devotee, he was also learned, and nonetheless he was asking all these questions to Sukadeva Goswami. And there it is stated that he was asking the questions for the sake of strictness. Although he knew, he was still just verifying that his understanding was correct, and in this way fine-tuning his understanding of the Absolute Truth. Still, there could be another reason given of why an advanced saintly personality would still ask questions to another senior personality. It is said that in the sky, just as in the sky there are different birds flying on different levels, in the same way, in the sky of the Absolute Truth, there are different devotees flying on different levels. So there may be an answer to a particular question up to one level. And then there may be an answer to that same question up to, again, another level. Right. And in this way, there is no limit, actually. As we saw, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was the greatest scholar of his time. And by the influence of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he had become a devotee. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya previously was an impersonalist. Now a devotee, he asked Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to explain the Atmaram verse, which is a very famous verse in Srimad Bhagavatam. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya to first explain it himself. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya gave 9 explanations of the verse, 9 different explanations. He explained the different meanings of each word in grammatical ways, and it came to 9 explanations. Then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave 60 explanations. 60. And then after he had completed these 60 explanations and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya expressed his appreciation, then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave 1 more explanation, just to show that there was no limit. And this was finally the conclusion. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya began to glorify Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for his explanations and said, "You are indeed the Supreme Personality of Godhead. No one else could have done such a thing." But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just waved that aside and said, "No, why are you speaking of me? Speak of Bhagavatam." Right? "Why are you speaking of my glories? We are here speaking of the glories of Bhagavatam. Don't mention me, mention Bhagavatam." Not only can we give so many explanations, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave 61, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya gave 9, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu never touched upon the meanings that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya gave. So 70 already between them. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said there are unlimited meanings to this verse. And he said not only unlimited meanings to this verse, unlimited meanings to all the verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. So in this way, the Vaishnavas are also very eager to ask other Vaishnavas about topics that are well known to them, in the hope that the nectar will be churned a little further, in the hope that maybe there will be a slightly different light thrown upon this point that they knew very well. That possibly this Vaishnava may have a special insight and which may deepen our understanding. And for this reason, we are also hearing Srimad Bhagavatam class from different speakers. Srila Prabhupada stresses the point that it is more important to hear Srimad Bhagavatam than to read Srimad Bhagavatam. And he explains, because by reading the Srimad Bhagavatam, we are again and again reading the same text, and we are having our impressions of these texts. But by hearing explanations of these texts, we will find that our impressions, right, sometimes may be slightly understood differently by someone else who is giving an explanation of the same point, and then we may think, "Hey, I never thought of it like that." And in this way, our understanding of that particular philosophical point is deepened and widened. Right? And therefore, it is very important to hear transcendental knowledge being discussed in the assembly of devotees. And therefore, this exercise that we are having of daily selecting one speaker to speak on Srimad Bhagavatam is going on by the arrangement of Srila Prabhupada. Sometimes one may think, yes, but why are we not just every day listening to a tape of Srila Prabhupada? After all, Srila Prabhupada is the topmost Vaishnava, and whose lecture can ever come close to Prabhupada's lecture? No matter how good a lecture may be, it's never as transcendental as Prabhupada's lecture, because Prabhupada was on a different platform. So why don't we just listen to tapes of Prabhupada? Because Prabhupada wanted that this transcendental knowledge is presented again and again in different ways by various devotees according to their insights, so that we can grow in our understanding of Krishna conscious philosophy. So in this way, the discussions in Srimad Bhagavatam are also continuing. And sometimes similar points are being addressed, but slightly different. We're seeing here that the king is addressed with the title Maharaj, right? And we are often wondering why this title is also used in spiritual circles. Why would a sannyasi be addressed by the same title as a king, right? Are we meaning to say, my dear king, to a swami? Is that what we are saying? Is that actually the meaning of what we are expressing there? Is it that we are giving him respect like a king? Is it that we are calling him Maharaj to indicate that, yes, you are our master, you are our king, you are our ruler? Is that why? Well, one could say maybe that would be one extended meaning. But actually, the root of the word Maharaj, the word Raja, right, actually means the enlightenment that is coming from the Supreme Lord. Raja is actually referring to that, to enlightenment coming from the Supreme Lord. So therefore, Maharaja is a personality who is influential in spreading the enlightenment coming from the Supreme Lord. Therefore, the title is used for the king, because the king is meant to be the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as such, the king is the upholder of Dharma, and in that way, instrumental in the mission of the Lord, and in the same way, therefore, it can be utilized for a sannyasi and is suitable. So, although it may be translated with "my dear king," we know that it actually means "my dear king, who is the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead." Through you, the whole world is benefited. Such are the titles that are given to personalities. Like we were speaking about Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and Sarvabhauma means the entire earth. Sarvabhauma, the entire earth. So that means that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was such an exalted scholar that his influence could reach over the entire earth. He was a person of world caliber, such a scholar that outstanding in the entire world, and therefore known as Sarvabhauma. So in this way, many of the titles are given. For example, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Chakravarti, is a title. Chakra means circle. He who enlightens the circle of the devotees, Chakravarti. Right. So like that, various titles have been given. In other words, he who is the spiritual master of the spiritual masters, or Prabhupada, at whose feet all masters sit. Right. So the Vaishnavas are given various titles which are indicating their position. And the Vedic culture was very much like that. Yes, everyone had a title like that, indicating his position. In Mathura, we find still many Chaturvedis. Many people have the last name Chaturvedi, a title, knowing that they, meaning that they had studied the four Vedas. Others are known as Trivedi. They have studied the three Vedas, right? Like that, various titles are also given. In this way, the Vedic culture is a different culture than modern times. Yesterday, in the Tamil class, we were discussing that nowadays, in India, the culture is very, very quickly breaking down. And whereas previously, people were very much involved in remembering the glories of the Lord, now that is disappearing. And previously, everyone had names like of Lord Ramachandra or of Sita Devi. And nowadays, some Indians are beginning to call their daughters Dolly. Right? Just Dolly. Yes, this is going on. So the culture is slowly disappearing. Yes, my dear Dolly. So we look at this sometimes, and sometimes we are in India and we are shaking our head, you know, because we are seeing that the culture is getting lost so quickly, and people are doing their best so much to be Western, but they don't know how it is. Like I saw in Bombay on the beach, I saw some people throwing a frisbee, right? And they were terrible. Boy, were they bad, right? I've never seen people so hopeless. They were throwing the frisbee, and not once did the other person able to catch it, you know? No way, right? It was thrown so bad that it flew miles apart, and then they had to run after the frisbee, right? So while they were running, you know, they were enjoying that running, right? They were enjoying it and laughing, you know. And I could see, you know, they thought that the enjoyment was running after the frisbee, right? They didn't understand what the real enjoyment is of frisbee throwing. They had no idea what the real fun is all about, right? They thought that they were actually enjoying, now we are also like Westerners, right? But they didn't realize, you know, that the real thing is you throw it like from behind your back like that, and then you very casually, with a very nonchalant face, you know, you catch it like that, you know, and then you throw it like this, you know, and then the other guy goes on, pirouette, catches it, you know, throws it from under his leg, you know, then finally the guy catches it with his teeth, you know, it's like, wow, you know, that's frisbee, right? In ISKCON, we perfect this art with gulab jamun throwing. You know, those who've practiced with frisbee catching are very expert. The one who is most expert in the movement is Bibi Govinda Swami. No one can catch gulab jamuns as he can. Never fails, right? Always catches. Nowadays it's not going on so much, but it used to. You know, it's like something. He would catch. I've seen it many times. He was the king of the game. So like that, there are these things going on. So we see that people in India may be losing their culture today. Still, underneath the little veneer of imitation from the West, there is actually so much culture. Because this culture is very deeply ingrained in the way of life, and it doesn't wear off so quickly, even when consciously the culture is lost. Still so much is there. So much is there. One should not underestimate a birth in Indian culture. It is special. There is some special piety there, some special inclination towards appreciating spiritual life. That is there. somehow or other, culture is very important. The whole exchange here between the four Kumaras and Maharaj Prithu is very cultural. It is all happening very much according to proper behavior. Right? All due respect is given. Maharaj Prithu is giving respect to the four Kumaras. They are his superiors. He is worshipping them. But in exchange, they're also giving him respect, right? Which is also due to him, right? And in this way, everyone is given respect, and therefore everyone feels properly recognized, and yet there is like a distinction made. It's not that like one party has to establish its respect by putting the other one down, you know? Like, they are not so expert, and we are, you know, therefore very expert kind of mentality. No. Everything is very refined like this, and this is proper. So Srimad Bhagavatam gives us the real culture, the real roots of what we require, and we require to learn Vaishnav etiquette from these verses. Vaishnav etiquette is not just learned in a course or in a seminar, right? And one goes through a Vaishnav etiquette course and takes some notes, and now I've got my Vaishnav etiquette course, you know, I've done it. It is like a lifetime of practice. It is very, very refined. And this is becoming more and more important, actually. As time is going on, our focus shifts. In the beginning, the focus may be more on Krishna and also on the Vaishnavas. But with time, we become more and more eager to churn these relationships with the Vaishnavas. We become more and more aware of our dealings with the Vaishnavas. Just like in the beginning, in Krishna consciousness, sometimes I had disagreements with devotees. I still have disagreements with devotees because it's the nature of the material world that we have disagreements. I think even in the spiritual world there are disagreements, but they're transcendental disagreements. Right? So disagreements will be there, and in the beginning in Krishna consciousness, or for many years I might say, if I had a disagreement with a devotee, well, I would not just argue and fight. No. I would try and deal with it properly. So if I had a disagreement, I think, well, who's right? Right? Who is right? And then whatever the Vaishnavas, the general forum of Vaishnavas would consider to be right, if I had a reasonable amount of support from the devotees and from the scriptures and so on, then I would think, well, I'm right, you know. So, okay, then I would like let the other person know, I'm right, you know. Can I do? You know, it's just the way it is, you know. I mean, we cannot be sentimental. Somebody is right, somebody is wrong. This is right, right? But if one has that attitude, then the other party cannot always take it, right? And when the other party can't take it, then something may snap in that person and the relationship may become broken. One may be right, but the relationship may be broken over it. So what is the point of breaking relationships with Vaishnavas? There are so few. A Vaishnava is very precious. To have friendship with a Vaishnava is so important that one should do anything to maintain that relationship intact. Even if sometimes we are not saying unpalatable things. Therefore it is said the truth must be spoken in a palatable way, and sometimes the truth is not even spoken. Right? We're seeing in the case of Yudhisthira Maharaj and Arjuna. Arjuna went to Dwarka, he's been long away. There are many inauspicious omens, and Yudhisthira Maharaj has this suspicion that maybe Krishna has left the planet, and Arjuna comes in a very despondent mood And Yudhisthira doesn't want to talk about the truth. He doesn't want to ask about it. Although he feels it, he doesn't want to say anything. He doesn't want to upset anyone. He doesn't want to create a heavy atmosphere. He's very careful, very sensitive in his dealings. So this principle is very important in our movement. Right? If we would have this in our movement, it would help. You know, I mean, I sometimes get other stories. Right? I got news a few days ago that one brahmachari woke up the other brahmachari who was sleeping during Mongol Arctic, and the brahmachari flew out of his bed and strangled him, and to the point of near suffocation, right? I have also heard the same about the brahmacharini ashram, that the little skinny brahmacharini strangled the big fat one, to my surprise. I didn't know she had it in her. Right? All these things are also going on sometimes in our movement. Right? So, amazing enough, we have to somehow or other go beyond this platform, right? The platform of truly spiritual dealings, spiritual culture. So the culture of Bhagavatam is not the culture of this world. This is the eternal culture. The spiritual world is a very cultured place. Right? In the spiritual world, there are very refined dealings. Daily, different devotees are offering arti to other devotees, and all these things are going on. And you may think, well, you know, how is that happening? But if you go in Bengal, like now, the boat in Mayapur, the Nitai Padakamalam, will again soon take to the water. One can go. They invited me to go. I'm keeping it in mind. And because it's really nice, right? Then we float down the Ganges, and we go to these villages, and we go in the villages, and as soon as you come in the villages, the people come running out of the houses, and they bring water to wash the feet, and they bring arti paraphernalia, and they offer these things. Right? That is culture. Very, very nice. That's what they do. They have it ready in their house. I don't know. The arti tray must already be there, you know, just in case. Run out the house. They're very quick. Amazingly quick. I was once in South India, walking in the street, and we're doing a Harinam. And this lady comes running out of the house with a big pot of water, you know. And she wants to wash my feet, you know. And I go ISKCON style, you know. Oh, no, 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 no. And she looks at me. She goes, look, you know. I'm going to wash your feet, okay? This is the tradition. This is what we do, you know. And there's no. And, you know, so I wasn't really cooperating very much. And so she just threw the whole pot right over my feet, right over my shoes and anything, you know. I was just standing in my shoes. And it was a huge pot of water, you know, like maybe 5 liters or something, a whole bucket. It was as big as a bucket. So I was just there like, wow, you know, soaking in my shoes. Right? What could I do? Vedic culture was stronger than my Western refusal, you know. There was no question of just ignoring thousands of years of tradition. This was it, you know. My feet were washed. And she scooped up the water, put it on her head, and that was it. She was very satisfied and went back inside the house. I learned one thing from that occasion, actually. I learned from that occasion that one cannot always refuse worship, you know. That one cannot just refuse glorification. This is our Western system, right? We refuse the glorification. No, you cannot worship me. I'm not worthy. But sometimes when it is offered and the other party wants it too much, then one just has to stand there and just accept it. All right, well, okay. That's how it is. And just gracefully accept. There is also such a thing of gracefully accepting glorification. Right? That's also there. Of course, we see how the four Kumaras did that. They did not just say, you know, like, no, we are fallen jivas, you know, how can you glorify us like this, Maharaj Prithu? You're talking nonsense, right? Like, which would be ISKCON style, you know, if you would like start glorifying Prabhu, you are a great devotee. No, no, I'm a dog. No, don't speak like this, right? No, no, sometimes we have to gracefully accept. Then, after the other party's finished, all right, then it is our turn to glorify. Like this, there is a whole culture. And we must learn all these finer aspects of culture. The whole purpose of Vedic culture is based on the principle of satisfying the other person, right? Rather than satisfying ourselves or this, that. No, on satisfying the other person. This is the underlying current in Vedic exchanges. That one should not leave any person dissatisfied. That is the mood. That is the principle. We see that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also follows this mood. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to go to Vrindavan and he asked Ramananda Roy and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya if they would please grant him permission. He really wanted to go to Vrindavan. And they said, My Lord, it will be very inconvenient for you to go now to Vrindavan because soon the rainy season will begin. So this is a bad time to go. So please don't go. Please. And they were using some excuse. They were using an excuse, you know. So please stay here a little longer and go later when it will be more comfortable for you, right, to go. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu knew very well they're using an excuse. They're just trying to keep me here, you know, because they don't want me to go. But, all right, they don't grant me permission to go. All right, then I will wait. I will stay. So he waited for almost one more year. Right? And then after 1 year, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, now, upon your request, I've waited for 1 year. So he let them know that I've for 1 year, I've been obliging you. For a whole year, I have been doing what you want. So now you've become indebted to me. Because for a whole, he didn't say like that, but that's what he was indicating. Right? That's the culture. It's like for a whole year I've tried to please you. Now you're indebted to me. So now, you know, please grant me that I may go. Now you cannot again say, no, no, please don't go. No, because you can see the person has for a whole year tried to satisfy you. You've become indebted. Now you'll have to grant him what he wants. See? Oh, these are all finer dealings of culture. So we find these dealings in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And we should absorb these things in our behavior amongst Vaishnavas. And we see that these kind of dealings exist amongst senior Vaishnavas in our movement. We see that senior Vaishnavas in our movement are dealing like that and become very flexible. When another Vaishnava says, when another senior Vaishnava says, oh, you please go to Japan, then, you know, well, I guess I'm going to Japan. Okay, well, I'll try. And then, you know, you don't just politely say, I'll try. Then you have to go to Japan, which is all the way on the other side of the world, you know. God, you know, just because someone desires it. These are finer elements of trying to satisfy. So this spirit of trying to satisfy the other person in any relationship, if everyone develops that, then that will change the whole world. Right? That will make everything very satisfying and very wonderful. And that is actually the mood of a servant. Right? That is truly the mood. I am your servant. Dasusmi. That is what it means. Dasunu 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 das. Trying to satisfy the Vaishnavas. Instead of I would really like this, I would really like that, to see, like, what do the Vaishnavas really like? That should become our. Of course, sometimes we also have a really strong desire.
Mm-hmm.
That must be. But we must have this mood of trying to please the other person in a relationship. Otherwise, there will be strain sooner or later. Otherwise, we'll have strained relationships, without a doubt, if this etiquette is not there. And so many times, we do have strained relationships. So therefore, I wanted to stress this point today. Okay. With that, I'll stop. And if there are any questions or comments, I'll try to answer.
How frustrating for him is when he wants to give a present to his disciples, and his disciples say, no, I cannot accept. He was explaining how he really feels he wants to give something to help
Yeah, one must know how to accept. Yeah, it's another aspect of what you saw.
And this one, what is behind this? What you said, this mood of artificially no rejecting, no answer calling. What is behind? Which principle is behind this? I don't know.
The question is clear. The question, it brings to my mind, the question is whether it is important to explore that, because basically you're talking about what is behind our conditioned nature. So whether we should psychologically analyze our conditioned nature is a question in my mind. Right? But anyway, I can do it, you know, to oblige you. It's like we are trying to be humble, and we are trying in this way to adhere to Vaishnav etiquette. That's the idea. We're trying to not falsely be honored, we're trying to say, no, I'm actually not worthy. We're trying to take the humble position, because we have been taught that it is very important to take the humble position. But we, there is more than that. There is that element of satisfying the devotees, of being the servant of the devotees. And humble means the servant of the devotees. So if the devotee wants that I serve him by, you know, allowing him to hang garlands around my neck, okay, you know, thank you very much, nice. What to do, you know? That is also a form of humility, right? To be the servant. In France, in Numayapur, in the room of Paramgati Maharaj, he has a picture there of Prabhupada, which is really nice. It is a picture, a photo, it's very big, and it is a photo of Prabhupada in a program in Gujarat. And at this time, there was some local king of a small district, small king, who had this beautiful silver throne, right, which he offered to Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was sitting on this throne. And in the picture, Prabhupada is sitting on the throne, and his expression is like, you know, he's sitting with folded hands, and he has many garlands, and he has an expression on his face like such humility, right? And the look on his face is almost apologetic, like, you know, please forgive me on sitting on this monster of a chair, you know. I'm like, you know, I know it's shocking, embarrassing, you know, that someone is sitting on a chair like this, you know. So please forgive me, you know. I have to do this. It's my duty. I have to accept it, you know. That's it, you know. It's like, it's my duty to accept, right? But you please, you know, don't think anything of it, you know. So an expression like that. And it's like, for me, it's like that picture. is an emblem of Prabhupada's humility. You know, like, I mean, many times I use this as an example of Prabhupada's humility. How he's just very humbly accepting all this glorious worship, etc., right? All the silver, etc. So I think if someone is not able to deal properly and actually understand what, then he has an immature understanding of humility. Humility includes very much to please the Vaishnavas and to be the willing servant of the Vaishnavas. And if they want us to do something, do it. Right? So much so, you know, it's like someone's leading a kirtan and, you know, and he may be doing it, he may have a funny voice or something, you know, so you're going, you know, you may be tempted to also go. But no, he's taking pleasure in it and he wants you to get into his kirtan, right? So, all right, we please him, we get into it. Not that we just, you know, he wants you to also go along. Not that you're there in that kirtan thinking, he can't sing, right? And that the whole kirtan is thinking, my God, he sings like Donald Duck, right? Or something like that. No, just, maybe he sings like Donald Duck, but anyway, he sings for Krishna, right? So, give him his satisfaction. Give everyone the satisfaction. Yeah. Like Prabhupada said to Giriraj, you know, please take a rasgulla to please an old man. You know, you're a brahmachari, you don't eat rasgullas at night. I know. Take a rasgulla to please an old man. Yeah, please. So, very important, this to be flexible and to kind of... And it's not European, you know. European means to be rigid. In Europe, you see, European means to be... in the South, it gets a little more fluid, you know. But that's why they say Italy is like the India of Europe, sometimes they say, right? Especially South Italy. You know, in other parts of Europe, very rigid. Rigid in our ideas, rigid in it's my way, my privacy, my need, my idea, my understanding. You know, it's like so we have to become a little more okay, yes, going along with things. All right, yes, sure, adjust a little bit. The sense of adjusting to others is very, very important in Vaishnava relationships. Any other question? Yeah. Different folks, different strokes, different natures. Some people are asutosh. Lord Shiva is easily pleased, but also easily angered. Others are hard to please. So whatever may be, you know, it's like Raghava Pandit was very difficult to please. He wanted the perfect coconut, and when it wasn't perfect, he wouldn't accept it. And even when they brought the perfect coconut and they touched the door frame, he said, throw it away. But God, you know. I mean, you can understand that they were all thinking, we're going to make a wonderful offering to the Lord. Everyone was part of it. It wasn't just Raghava Pandit who was making the offering. Everyone was part of it. Mm-hmm. And they were going to bring the best coconuts from the best place of Bengal, and they took all the trouble of climbing in the tree and finding the best coconut. They got it. Then, you know, they cut it very nicely and everything was ready. And then they were giving it to Raghava Pandit, who was going to make the final offering, you know. How would you feel, you know? You go and with a lot of trouble, you get the best of coconuts. And you clean it nicely, you cut it nicely, and you bring it to the pujari. And the pujari says, it's unacceptable. You would say, what? Right? What? You know, what? You know, do you realize, you know, I climbed a tree, a big tree, I risked my life. You know, I walked many kilometers with this coconut, and now I'm bringing it here. And you dare to turn it down, you better offer that coconut, you know, or I bash you on the head with this coconut, right? Isn't it that we would kind of feel like it? We might feel like that. So Raghava Pandit was impossible to please. Impossible. He was super strict. Super duper strict. But still, you know, it was pure. So different devotees have different moods. Some are very liberal, some are very strict. Whatever, you know. Some are not easy to please. Yeah, I'm not so easy to please. But if somehow or other we manage to please them, right, some way or other, we try to melt their hearts. If we do, things will become very transcendental, without a doubt. So, you know, bring some Mahaprasadam for a while. Soften that person up a little bit. You know. After a few days of getting Mongol sweets, nobody gets easier to please that person. That is the culture of Vaishnavas. That says tadati pratigrinati. We give each other things. The idea is to please others. To kind of make him satisfied with, to make him feel satisfied with us, so that everyone is satisfied with us. It's very nice if everyone's satisfied with us. Not that kind of thing, well, you know, if they don't like me, that's their problem. Well, that's their problem. You know, what can I do? You know, not everybody can like you, and I guess there's something wrong with them. You know, I mean, it's like, shit. Anyway, and even if, you know, they don't like my nature, and even if my nature is not perfect anyway, I am the way I am, and if they don't like me, too bad for them. That's more Western mode. Yeah. One must develop this mode. No, everyone must be satisfied. Finished. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.